Any one of you who does not renounce all his possessions cannot be my disciple. Ooh, that's a hard one. First thing in the morning to hear. That's pretty hard for all of us to hear. Not only that, but the very first section of this gospel about hating mother and father, spouse and children and brothers and sisters. It's really hard to hear. It jars our mind that Christ could be so, not just demanding, but so crass in what he asked for. Well, there's a couple of contexts that we have to understand here. First of all, Jesus has got this huge crowd following him, right? He's walking along, healing people, and they're constantly asking for signs. This is Luke's gospel and portrays him on his way to Jerusalem, and he's healing and teaching and preaching, and they're constantly pressing upon him. And you can see he's getting a little irritated. Look, you don't even know what you're... All you're looking for is signs, he keeps on telling them. And he turns around and says, look, you don't know... If you really want to follow me, that's what he turns around and says. Now, the biblical word hate is not the modern word hate that we have come to in English the way we translate it today. As we understand, it's a heavily emotionally attached word, right? We hate somebody. There's a lot of energy and emotion to it. The biblical word hate here really is like if you prefer more this than that. So it doesn't have the emotional energy, but it has the conviction of if you prefer this than that. And what Jesus is saying here is that if you prefer anything other than me, then you're not going to last. You need to be fully committed to being a disciple. And then he goes on to explain, and next week we'll hear more explanation what that really means. But here's what it requires of us. It's an all-in commitment. I have to understand, that's what it's about. This discipleship isn't a partial commitment. It's a total change of life, a total change of behavior to follow Christ. So it talks about changing who we are. I was recently reading this book called The Power of Habit. It's not a new book, but it's a very insightful look. It talks about how we rely on our lives as habit. I'm trying to figure out how to apply this to our Christian way of life, to our discipleship. And I've been struggling with it. But here's the premise of the book, and it's pretty powerful. It says that basically that a habit is the most ancient part of our brain. When I say ancient, genetically ancient, the inner part of our brain physiologically is a thing called the basal ganglia. The basal ganglia is in the inside, and that's where habit actually comes from. Good or bad, it is no moral, there is no moral decision making happening there. That happens at the frontal lobe, right? The basal ganglia makes it, it develops habits, and there's a very simple way that it works. And it works regardless of who we are, for good or bad habit. It basically is there's three components. There's a cue, a trigger, if you would. And then the action, you do it, and then there's an immediate reward. And then once you have all three of those, that you'll develop a habit, for good or bad. For example, let's say the cue is the smell of donuts. Right? The action is you take one. And the reward is, that was so good. Okay, so that's a typical cue action. Now, if you want to change your behavior, what do you need to do? Change the queue. Avoid the queue. So if you walk by the donut store every day, if you want to avoid having a donut every day, then you better start walking another route. Okay? But here's what it actually finds. So that's kind of the basic premise. So that's kind of like a bad habit. But if you want to, like, for example, a good habit, you give yourself a queue so that it will produce rewards. So, for example, if you want to exercise, then you make it really easy by having your runners or your running gear right by the door as soon as you wake up. So you see it, cue. Oh, I need to cue. That's it. You go out for a run, and then the reward is either multiple things. It could be, I buy myself a smoothie for having accomplished it, would one thing what some people do. Or you simply have recorded on your device, I did my run, and the endorphins that come from having gone for exercise. So cue, action, reward. Now, it works for every part of training. Now, so here's what's interesting. Is if you want to change your behavior, here's what they found out, the science of the brain, inside the brain, is that you actually, the cues keep on happening. So if you're never going to avoid donut stores. just because they're all over the place. So as soon as you smell it, you're going to like, oh, a zombie, you walk in, you take your donut and you eat it, right? Not quite that bad, but it's close enough. So what you have to do is you have to change your action based on the cue. This is the part. So now what you have to do is there's a thing called, the fourth element that's super important here is craving. You have to crave the circle, right? So the more craving you have, then the more the cue lines up and the way everything works. So if you crave and there's, of course, in dietary things, there's tongues called craving, but that's a different. Let me give an example of this. So years ago, do you know, like about 100 years ago, only about 5 to 10% of people used toothpaste, right? Never brushed their teeth. It was a huge problem, and it was a national actual problem in America that teeth were rotten. And when they went to World War I, it was a national emergency teeth problem because so many people have rotten teeth, okay? So they've been trying toothpaste, all this, but this guy called Hopkins, with a particular type called, just an ordinary toothpaste called Pepsodent, and he took it and he made the full circle, the three and the fourth element. And what the fourth element was is it gave a craving to start the cue. So let me give an example. What they did in the Pepsodent was this, was that not only did they have the regular cleaning agent, but they had this agent in there that gave you that tingling sensation, the mint, right? You know that actually has nothing to do with cleaning. It does absolutely nothing. All it does, it gives you the sensation of clean, which creates the trigger of, ooh, that's good, right? So you have your clean teeth, oh, I feel clean. No, it doesn't do anything, right? So the irony of it is that's what he picked up on, and he says, get rid of the film of your teeth, and you feel clean. And that became the loop. So now we have like 90% of people in America using toothpaste. So it changes in whole behavior. Okay, so all that's background. How do we change our behaviors as adults? First of all, we have to ask, what is the loop for us as Christians, as disciples? So what's the cue, the action, and what's the reward? So that's a real question. What's the reward for doing the right thing? What is it? The habit. Now, what's the reward for doing it? That's not the habit's not a reward. What is it? You're feeling good. Is it that good that you feel that good that you want to do it again? Well, actually, it is. It works out. It is that when you. But we have to actually. Here's what's interesting: as Catholics, I ask this all the time, people, and people are afraid to say that it feels good to do good. We're terrible as Catholics. Somehow we've meant to feel terrible about everything we do. I don't know what you grew up like. It was like, oh, Christianity was meant to be. It was the cross. This is Jesus. Jesus is not a Hopkins marketing advertising specialist. He says, here, pick up your cross and follow me. Look at what you're going to have. You're going to die on a cross. Come follow me. Oh, yeah. Woo, let's go follow him. He wasn't a marketing expert. But here's what we have to understand. Today, the young people are getting blasted by marketing. So we've got to start thinking, like, and maybe Jesus didn't, but we need to start thinking, what actually is going to actually help us? Because they are getting, the reason why they're walking away from being doing good in the church is because they're being given all these sort of loops, habit loops, that we know doesn't produce long-term effects, but it does give them the feeling that they're doing something. So we got to think through this, and we have to actually say, for example, that it does feel good. When you do the right thing, we have to name it. It feels good. When you pray, what happens? You have to learn to name what happens. What's the reward after praying? What happens, first of all, when you have a really good prayer? What happens? You feel peaceful. You feel calm. You feel, well, a little more centered. We have to name it. Why? Because that's the reward we're looking for. Because if we don't name it, if we don't say, then we'll never crave it. Right? So you then say, if you want peace and you want to feel good, hey, come and pray. Do you see what I'm saying? But we have got ourselves lost in this sort of just drudgery of Christian life, as if discipleship is, in fact, the whole way to the cross is painful. No, there will be cross in our life. But when you do the right thing, it feels good. And that's so important for us to admit to. Now, what else is it that we are called to do that's really, really important part of our Christian life? It's service. And how does that name the feeling there? Does it feel good when you do it? Sometimes. Getting up early on a Saturday morning, feeding lunch, not necessarily. Just like exercise, it doesn't feel good necessarily doing it, but when you've done it, it feels great. You know you've helped another human being in a difficult point in time. And friends, we've got to find ways to name the reward and cravings so that we can continue this transformative loop of habit changing. Remember, it's the cue, it's the action, and it's the reward and cravings. Let's name them so that our young people may come to experience the full transformation of discipleship.